Hey,
I say stupidly, thrilled to see her, yet not really understanding why this vision is gracing me with her presence.
Hey,
she replies nervously.
What are you doing here?
I ask, taking her in. I left her less than an hour ago, yet I feel like I haven't seen her in weeks. It was so fucking hard to tear away from that kiss earlier. She must have gotten in her car and followed me straight here.
Well,
she drawls with a slow shrug.
I was thinking about what you said before you left, and I kind of think tonight might be perfect.
My head swims. While I know what she's talking about, I'm thinking I didn't hear her straight. Perfect? She nods, sort of coyly, but her eyes heat up slightly. The dichotomy is sexy as hell on her.
Tonight, I think we would make it perfect.
Jesus. Yes, she's talking about sex. Tonight. Right now.
Going to invite me in?
She asks, her expression clearly saying she expects me to do so. Of course, I say, opening the door wider to gesture her in. But I don't want you to think I expect anything. My words are cut off. Rather than coming into my apartment, Nora walks her body right into mine. Her hands come to my face, slide along to the back of my head, and she pulls me down to her. Right to her mouth, where she launches a fully engaged, hot as fuck, sizzling kiss on me that makes my legs weaken and my cock thicken. Christ. This is happening. My legs bend, hands to her ass, and I'm hauling her up my body. When she tightens her legs around my waist, I spin, walking her back into the door where I can press up against her. She can't miss the fully engaged erection now hard between her legs, and it's confirmed when she moans and grinds down on me. Again, dizzy, flooded with sensation and overwhelmed by having a soft, warm woman in my arms for the first time in 16 months. But not just any woman, Nora. Her fingers dive into my hair, her mouth fusing onto mine. Tiny little noises of need echo in the back of her throat, and I have an overwhelming urge to tear her clothes off and take her right here against the door. But then I remember. She said it would be fucking perfect. While I'm not averse to eventually having her against the door, wall, or on the counter, wherever, I want to slow this down so it's enjoyed. I want to give her perfection. Pulling my mouth away, I pin my eyes on her face. It's flushed, her expression a bit dazed. You sure about this?
I stopped at the convenience store down the road and got condoms.
She replies, and I can feel the heat creeping up my neck. Good fucking thing, since I sure as hell don't have any. Dipping my face, I let my forehead rest against hers a moment. Let me apologize in advance for the fact I only have an air mattress in my room. Nora snorts, and I lift my head.
It doesn't matter, because it's going to be perfect, remember?
Yeah, I murmur softly. I remember. My mouth returns to hers, this time just brushing against it. Then I carry her through my small living room, past my pathetic recliner, and down the short hall to my bedroom. Nora merely presses her cheek against mine for the ride. I let her slowly slide down, relishing every inch of the way her body touches mine on the journey. It's relieving and torturous at the same time. Nora's feet touch the carpet, and she examines my small room before returning her attention to me. Her lips quirk up.
It's, functional.
Unless the mattress deflates while we're on it, I point out. We just stare at each other a moment before we burst out laughing, and this really is perfect. Come here, I say, crooking my finger. It takes her no more than 3 steps, but she's back in my arms and we're kissing. Slow, sensuous movements of our mouths, tongues, hands roaming, stroking, plucking. It's perfect because our clothes somehow seem to melt away without any awkward dancing around or interference with this slow-burn foreplay we have going on. Nora even manages to pull the condoms from her back pocket and gracefully tosses them onto my bed before I divest her of her jeans. I lower her to the mattress right in the center and follow. It's luckily inflated well enough that it holds us. Then my naked body is pressed flush against hers. She spreads her legs, and I nestle in, feeling the heat of her pussy against my cock as it rests there, so hard and ready I can feel my pulse beating within its length. Her breasts are soft under my chest, and her fingers play within my hair as she stares up at me. Feels good, I mutter, just pressed up against you like this. Her hips tilt a little, circle, and the friction against my dick makes me groan. I bend my head, take her mouth, and slide my tongue in. She fucking tastes great, too. Bet she would taste amazing between her legs. Should I go there? Would she want me to? I know I want to, but is it too soon to be intimate that way? For the first time, doubt creeps in, and I wonder if I even know what the hell I'm doing. Nora is responsive, writhing under me as we kiss, yet I find myself distinctly unsure of myself. I pull back, trying to glean what she would want me to do from her expression. It's been a long fucking time since I've had sex, and I don't know what to do. I think I used to be good at this shit, but maybe I was only good with MJ. Nora's hands cradle my face, and it causes me to focus in on her. Her eyes bore into mine, her voice gentle but sure.
This is going to be perfect,
she reassures me.
Don't overthink. Do what feels right and natural. I swear, Tacker, it will be perfect because it's us.
Relief floods through me, head to toe, followed by an intense rush of desire, not from her sexy body under me or the hot kiss we just shared, but because she believes in this. Us. Yeah, I'm turned on by that. I kiss Nora again, gently this time, almost a goodbye kiss. Then I start to move down her body, trailing my lips along her skin, along her collarbone, over her breast and her nipple. She arches her back and makes a purring sound, putting her hands in my hair and holding tight. By the time I reach her belly, Nora is spreading her legs for me, and I know she's right. It's going to be perfect. I thought I couldn't get any harder, but the first swipe of my tongue causes my cock to become painful. Ignoring it, I concentrate on her taste and the way she cries out every time I suck on her clit. So fucking responsive, bucking, arching, and making the most amazing sounds that have me practically dry-humping the mattress in response before she shatters, calls out my name, an homage. I feel revered, and I gentle her with soft caresses of my lips on the insides of her thighs. When her hands unclench from my hair, I look up her beautiful body to find her staring so intensely, I wonder for a moment if I did something wrong. But then she practically growls in a sexy, raspy tone.
Get inside me, now.
don't need any further encouragement. I grab one of the condoms, ripping it with my teeth as I surge up her body. Her legs splay open for me, and I get sidetracked by her pussy, shiny from my ministrations, and just waiting for me. My hands shake slightly as I roll the rubber on my cock. When I position myself at her entrance, I have to take a steadying breath. Nora's hand comes up, covering that area of my chest over my heart, while her other hand helps to guide me into her. I groan as she takes me in, so damn warm and tight. I have a moment of fear that I'm going to embarrass myself. Then Nora moves, a swivel of her hips, urging me to match her. I do, withdrawing, my body remembering exactly what to do, and then plunging back in. Yes, this. Absolutely fucking perfect. Nora and I move, a tangle of arms and legs, my cock plundering her sweetness, taking from her and giving it right back. We're gasping, undulating with hurried kisses in between, and whispering breathless, filthy talk to urge us higher. It can't be a cliche when we both explode together. It can't be coincidence or blind, dumb luck. It's because we're perfect together. As I start to come down, holding Nora tightly to me, I realize she might just be the absolute perfect thing for me. And yes, that makes me feel a twinge of guilt.
Chapter 25. Nora. The first time with Tacker was beautiful. I felt like a soaring eagle. As predicted, it was perfect. Sweet, tender, and so perfectly intimate that I had tears in my eyes when we came together. Now, as Tacker rides me from behind, his powerful body dominating me, it makes me realize there is still so much about this man I have to learn. I'm used to the taciturn man who had turned gently insightful, and I wasn't expecting Tacker to turn alpha in the bedroom. Lest anyone thinks I'm complaining, please know the two orgasms I've had this go-round speak differently. One hand on my shoulder, the other on my hip, he drives into me so deeply, I have to keep a hand braced against his wall, or else I'll get slammed right into it.
"You okay?"
he grunts through clenched teeth. At least, I think they're clenched. They sound like they're clenched. I can't tell because my head is hanging down, my own teeth gritted so they don't rattle out of my head.
Yes,
I manage to stutter, then take a deep breath. I lift my head, looking at him over my shoulder. God, his face is savage and beautiful in its pleasure. He's watching his cock tunneling into me, but as if he senses my gaze, his attention drifts right to my face.
Harder. God damn it, Nora,
he growls, and his expression grows so fierce in its determination that I can feel another orgasm starting to brew. Tacker fucks me as if his life depends on it. I put both hands on the wall, arch my back down, and tip my ass up to make it as easy as possible. Squeezing my eyes tight, I listen to Tacker's breathing. It's shallow, coming in half measures, and I know it means he's close. This is our third time tonight, and his impending orgasm is clear. Mine needs help, as I've had two since he started riding me a bit ago. My fingers slip between my legs, urging my body to sync with Tacker's. I want to go over the edge with him again. But then my hands start sliding slightly on the wall. My legs, which had been braced apart and dug down into the air mattress, are now involuntarily closing. Tacker grunts in annoyance of something, misses a stroke, and then mutters,
"What the hell?"
It takes me a minute to realize we're sinking, right down into the middle of the mattress while the edges start to puff around us.
Fuck,
Tacker growls as he realizes our predicament. We somehow popped the mattress and he's lost all leverage. Next thing I know, he's on his feet and hauling me up. Almost tripping over, he swings me around, steps onto the floor, and pushes me against the wall. Tacker doesn't miss a beat, pulls my hips back, kicks my legs apart, and drives back into me. God, yes! I cry out, as my nails score into his wall.
Don't need a fucking mattress,
he mutters, putting his hand between my legs. It only takes a few plucks of his fingers against my clit for my third orgasm to tear through me. Not as powerful as the first two, but still with enough punch I call his name again.
Yes,
he praises as he slams into me, once, twice, a third time, and his entire body jerks against me in release. Tacker's arms come around me, and he straightens my body. Chin on my shoulder, he holds me through his orgasm. Rough, fast, and perfect. I look over at the poor mattress. Tacker lifts his head, and I can feel him taking stock of the current sleeping situation.
Guess I really need to get on buying an actual bed, huh?
I laugh, leaning my head against his chest. Although my legs are like jelly right now, and I'd love nothing more to collapse onto a sound mattress, what we just did was well worth it, in my opinion.
Totally worth it, he says. But I have an idea.
Tacker pulls away, and I feel him slide out, leaving me feeling empty. He takes my hand, leads me out of the room and across the hall to his small bathroom. It's surprisingly neat, for a man, but small and shabby, because this apartment complex has seen better days. Without any embarrassment, Tacker handles the condom, then runs a washcloth under cool water. I'm stunned when he turns, giving me a gentle wipe between my legs before cleaning himself off, followed by a soft kiss. Then he has my hand again, leading me into the living room. I hadn't gotten a good look before, but now I realize it's sparsely furnished with just a recliner and a floor lamp. There's a fleece blanket draped over the back of the chair, and I bet Tacker actually sleeps in it sometimes. In a fluid move, he grabs the blanket, snakes an arm around my waist, and pulls me down into the chair on top of him. I shift to my side, cuddling into him, and he drapes the blanket over us after extending the recliner fully. Tacker's arms come around me.
If you're going to stay the night, this is now the best I can offer you.
I'll probably head back to my place, I say regretfully, even though it would be horribly uncomfortable to sleep all night in this contraption with Tacker. I've got an early morning appointment. I feel his lips come to the top of my head.
First thing tomorrow, I'm buying a bed. Promise.
That's indication enough that Tacker fully intends to have me stay over in the future. I'm down with that, which makes me extend a like offer. And you can stay at the ranch when convenient, too.
Definitely, he murmurs, giving me a squeeze.
We lay in silence a bit more, and I start to feel a little drowsy. Maybe sleeping like this is doable.
Do you mind if I talk to you about MJ?
Tacker says into the silence surrounding us. It jolts me, and my head bounces off his chest so I can look at him. It's the last thing in the world I expected him to say. But I guess counselor mode never truly leaves me. I'm not put out in the slightest. Of course not, I assure him, shifting again so I can give him my full attention. What's up?
I'm feeling guilty,
he says, and that's not surprising. Being intimate with another woman is bound to cause that. Am I the first since... My words trail off, but he gets me.
Yes, and I hate that I'm feeling guilty because what we just did, it was beyond amazing. I don't want you to think my feelings of guilt trivializes what we just shared.
I don't, I say, giving a tiny pat of my hand to his chest. And I sense there's more. I can always tell when someone's holding back on me just a bit. And while Tacker has been fully transparent with me since we had his breakthrough of sorts that day he sobbed across Starlight's back, I know he's not giving it all to me. Sighing, Tacker admits,
When you and I were in the bedroom and things were getting hot, leading up to us fucking, well, part of me hoped it would be mediocre. Because I know mediocre with you would still be fantastic. But I thought to myself, if sex with you was just average, then I would be able to hold a little something of MJ. That would still be the most perfect. And? I press, not because my ego is needing the answer. I know he needs to confront this head on if he's going to move forward with a healthy new relationship. I hate I'm comparing the two of you. Fucking hate it, but what we just did was about as far from mediocre as you can get, and he falters again. Can't seem to bring himself to say it. So I step in and give him a hand. And you think you're letting MJ down because of how great it was and how much you enjoyed it? He nods. Stupid. Natural, I correct him. Spouses and intimate partners have to work through loyalty issues. You're normal, Tacker. And I'm okay if building something with me causes you to feel guilty about leaving MJ's memories behind. But you don't have to do that. You can keep those memories fresh and alive. You can appreciate those things that are still perfect about her, even if it's things that showcase me as less than stellar. You're above stellar in every way, Tacker assures me. I most certainly am not, and if we hang in there, you'll get my bad side eventually. I can handle it, he says, then gives me an exaggerated smirk. You can make it up to me in orgasms. I can I? I drawl, giving him a playful push. I feel like I need to make a few up to you right now. I've had far more than you this evening. Tacker removes his arms from around me to tuck his hands behind his head. He grins, eyes flashing devilishly.
I'm not averse to you starting on that now.
Tilting my head, I press a kiss to his chest and slide my hand in between us, searching for his cock. It's soft and sated in my hand, but it responds almost immediately when I start to stroke. Tacker's eyes flutter closed, and a serene smile plays at his lips. I gently move myself down his body, careful not to do anything that would tip us out of the recliner, and finally put my mouth on him.
Nora,
he murmurs. I have to admit, I love the sound my name makes on his lips.
Chapter 26, Tacker. It's been a long week, and I'm more than a little excited to see Nora. On Monday, we had a home game, and I was beyond stoked Nora wanted to come. It's a lot on her to make that 45-minute drive to the arena, but it means something to know she's in the stands watching me. I think it means something to her that I want her there, too. After the game, we didn't go out with the team. Rather, we went to my apartment, since I was leaving the next morning for a 4-day road trip. Again, another concession Nora is making to spend time with me, as she has an early work day on Tuesday like I do. I had some foresight, though. After the great air mattress bursting debacle, one thing I did this past weekend was order a bed. It would take a few weeks to come in, but I did manage to get a box spring and mattress to my apartment in the back of my truck. We'd at least be sleeping more comfortably than in a recliner. Can't say there was a whole lot of sleeping Monday night. The prospect of not seeing each other for several days apparently gave us both an excess of energy that needed to be expended. All I can say is sex with Nora is out of this world. The connection is near to perfect, almost as if she were made to fit me. Despite the small twinges of guilt that I'm leaving MJ behind for another woman, my time with Nora is more than I ever expected. It continues to feel right. It continues to feel like I'm still on the right path. My relationships with my teammates are flourishing. Laughing is actually quite easy now. And the moments of sadness and guilty reflection are fewer. I feel like I'm actually entitled to be happy. Frankly, a lot of the credit for that goes to Dr. Dumfries, who I'm still seeing a few times a week. He continues to encourage me to live my life, and he now has me confronting some of the more traumatic events of the crash. I have to give the man credit. He's nowhere near the douche I had originally assumed him to be. While I'm as open as I can be with him, I have outright lied to him as to why I've returned. There's no way I could ever tell him about Nora and me because it could put her at risk for some type of censure. So I lied and told him the drive to her place was too inconvenient. Luckily, our conversations haven't even gotten close to discussing my readiness to date or open myself back up to romantic relationships. But because it's team-ordered therapy, he tends to concentrate on what's needed to better my relationships with my teammates and coaches, and that's fine by me. Nora and I are doing just fine. More than fine, she's simply amazing to me. I've missed her greatly this week. I was gone Tuesday through Friday playing games on the East Coast. I have one more road trip next week to Dallas to play my old team, then it's playoff time. Our team plane landed late last night, but I was up early this morning. Nora took the day off, and we're going to spend it together. It didn't even take her a lot to convince me to go on a horseback ride with her to start out, and then we'd figure out what to do after that. Not sure if it dings my man credibility or not, but the fact Nora's waiting for me on the porch stoop when I pull up in front of her ranch house makes my chest constrict a bit. She pops up, leveling a broad smile as I bring my truck to a halt. She's at my door waiting for me when I open it, and then to my utter fucking delight, she's climbing up on the running board to wrap her arms around my neck and press her mouth to mine. MJ never would have done that. She was more reserved by nature, very loving and affectionate, but usually in a responsive way. I don't let myself feel guilt for making that comparison. It's natural, and Nora has validated that for me. She's also not threatened by it, so I let it ride, choosing to appreciate the difference instead. I can't say I would ever mind Nora climbing on me. Just as one hand is going to her ass, she manages to pull away slightly to look me right in the eye. A woman who is not afraid to express her feelings, she says,
"I really missed you this week."
"Same," I mutter, ridiculously overwhelmed by the emotion in her voice and feeling completely lacking in giving it back. Not that I don't want to, but it's hard, uttering feelings. Nora knows it, and she purses her lips in a cute smile.
"Ready to ride?"
"As ready as I'll ever be," I say. She hops off the running board, letting me exit my truck, and continues to chatter.
"After, I thought I'd make us some lunch. I got a bunch of great deli meats, and I can make some hoagies or something. And then, after..."
She winks at me over her shoulder.
"There's something wrong with my bed. I could use your help in figuring it out."
Chuckling, I grab her hand, halt her forward progression, and pull her into me. Our arms go around each other, and Nora grins up at me. "I've missed having you next to me at night." Her eyes soften, as does her mouth, and I can tell they were the right words to say. Dipping my head, I get close to her face so I can murmur, "I missed being inside you." Nora groans, her eyes fluttering closed. Bringing a hand to the back of her head, I press my lips to her brow just briefly before I promise her, "But we're more than likely to break your bed versus fixing it later, just so you know." Another groan from Nora, and she presses in close to me. My heartbeat pulses at her nearness. I inhale, letting just her scent alone consume me. Maybe a horse ride is a stupid idea.
"Come on,"
Nora drawls as she pulls away, taking my hand in hers.
"Let's go saddle up."
I keep my thoughts to myself because her idea of saddling up and mine are probably two very separate things at this point. She leads me over to the barn, and the happy knickers that some of the horses give as they poke their heads from their stalls are all reserved for Nora. Those animals love her with an unshakable bond. I start to reach out to touch the nose of a dappled gray horse that's especially friendly when Nora drops my hand and says,
"What's wrong?"
For a moment, I'm confused, but then I see Raoul kneeling on one knee by a wooden box used to hold equipment. He's resting a forearm on the edge and his head is hanging low, his trademark straw hat on the ground. Nora rushes to his side and I hustle over there as well. Raoul's head hangs heavy, but his eyes lift to meet hers. He gives it a small shake, his voice gruff.
"I'm fine. Just a little dizzy is all. Too hot, I think."
The man is sweating, but it's not overly hot in here. Nora goes to her knees, putting her face near his.
"Raoul, you're scaring me."
He gives an annoyed wave of his hand, dismissing her concerns.
"I'm fine, just a little hot is all."
"And dizzy,"
she says, repeating his own words.
"Are you feeling anything else? Pain? Chest pressure?"
Glad she's asking those questions, it's what I'd be concerned about. With a grunting effort and another head shake, Raoul pushes up to a standing position. Nora tries to help him, but he shrugs her off.
"I'm fine. Just needed a little break."
Nora meets my eyes, and I can tell that doesn't assure her at all. She also appears a bit stymied because Raoul is blowing her off in a pretty firm manner. I don't have any such qualms about strong-arming him if need be, though.
"You look a little pale,"
I say, coming to Nora's side. My hand goes to her back, a show of support.
"I'm a little queasy,"
he admits. Nora rolls her eyes, annoyed I got that info out of him.
"Maybe a stomach bug."
Maybe not. I don't miss the subtle drift of his hand to his chest where he rubs at the center of it. Nora doesn't miss it either.
"Does your chest hurt?"
she demands.
Heartburn, he mutters. "The chorizo and eggs this morning, coming back to haunt me."
Nora's eyebrow cocks high, telling me she doesn't know whether to believe him or not.
"How about I take you to an urgent care clinic?"
she suggests gently.
"Maybe you've got a bug or something that could use a hit of antibiotics."
"I don't need no damn doctor,"
he growls. When Nora flinches from his tone, I have to clench my fists, but they unfurl when Raoul immediately backpedals.
"I'm sorry, honey. I'm just grumpy because I don't feel good."
"Will you at least lay down and rest?"
she suggests, putting her arm on his shoulder.
"It will make me feel better."
"Got too much to do,"
he replies. But I note he doesn't shrug off her touch.
"Getting ready to feed the horses."
"I can handle that,"
Nora interrupts, cutting off any excuses. "And I'll help," I add. Looks like our day spent together is going to be working the ranch, but I'm fine by that as long as I get to be around Nora.
"In fact,"
Nora drawls, looking from Raoul to me.
"Tacker, do you mind driving Raoul to the main house in the gator?"
Next ensues a 5-minute argument between Nora and Raoul, who is adamantly opposed to being coddled and put to bed in her house so she can tend to him. When their voices start rising in frustration, I take matters into my own hands.
"Come on, Raoul,"
I say with a jerk of my head to the gator. "I'm going to drive you to your house. Nora can start feeding the horses, and I'll make sure you're all set up. Then you can call us if you need us, okay?" Nora opens her mouth, but I give her a slight shake of my head. Let it go, babe. Gritting her teeth, she gives a huff of annoyance before stomping off to the storage room at the other end of the barn to grab some feed. Raoul immediately looks relieved and even paler, if possible. Without a word, he starts ambling to the gator, his hand rubbing at his breastbone again. I jump in the driver's seat, and Raoul has to point me to the correct trail to take. I've never even seen his house on the property, but then again, I haven't seen much of the full ranch yet. I had hoped to do that with Nora today, but that will easily wait for another time. He's quiet on the drive, somewhat slumped in his seat and a little green around the gills. Mano a mano, I say as we bump along the dirt trail to his house. What's going on with you? First, Raoul says, arching an eyebrow. Don't try to butter me up with poor Spanish. I snort, my lips curling up. Second, he says a little more quietly, I don't know what's going on. I feel like shit, okay? And I don't want Nora to worry about me. Probably a bug, like she says. Going to lay down and sleep it off. I'll be fine after. Heartburn, huh? I press. Once again, I let my gaze linger on the hand rubbing at his chest. It drops, and he stubbornly refuses to answer me. A small one-story ranch house comes into view with the same type of stucco siding and red-tiled roof as Nora's larger house. It's cute, has hanging baskets of flowers and a well-manicured yard filled with cacti and other desert flora. You two getting serious? Raoul asks, which catches me by surprise. I glance over at him. He just stares right back, determination in his eyes that I'm not to blow off his curiosities or concerns. I think so, I say, keeping it vague enough that if he wants more info, he's going to have to push me for it. I might be an open book with Nora or Dr. Dumfries these days, but I keep stuff pretty close to the vest from most people. Maybe I've told Aaron a little bit about my feelings for Nora, but I'm still navigating all kinds of murky, guilty waters, so I don't talk about it much. She's different, Raoul says, then goes silent. Son of a bitch is playing my vague game and making me work if I want the info, and I most certainly do. Different how? I press as I bring the gator to a stop in front of his porch. Smiling all the time, he says, his eyes boring hard into mine. Lighter in her step, fucking bluebirds on her shoulders, and stuff like that. The grin that comes unbidden to my face makes him grimace. Really? I ask, sounding a little too much like a middle schooler for my ultimate tastes, but no taking that back. She likes you, Dacre, Raoul says earnestly. A lot. Don't mess it up, okay? You already had that talk with me, remember? Just reiterating, he mutters as he hauls himself out of the gator. He bends to poke his pale, sweaty face inside. I love that girl more than anything. And I like you too. I don't want to see either of you get hurt or let down. I don't see that happening, I assure him. You have to know I care for her quite a bit, right? I think so, he concedes, then straightens. Now, I'm hauling my ass to bed. We'll check in on you later, I say. Bring you something to try for lunch, if you're up to it. I don't need no damn lunch, he snarls, but I don't argue with him. There's no way Nora is going to let him languish in this house by himself without trying to care for him. Raoul is like her father. She's like his daughter. I fully understand the stakes here and the depth of caring that goes on between these two people. And yeah, I'm touched Raul said he liked me too. It means a lot that I have his approval for Nora.
Chapter 27. Nora.
I can't, I moan as I move up and down on Tacker's shaft. He fills me almost to the breaking point, where I'm afraid I won't be able to handle the cataclysmic release cresting just over the horizon. Tacker's large hands grip me by the hips. With his biceps bulging, he helps me ride him a little faster.
You can,
he grunts. Pressing my palms into his chest, I toss my head back and close my eyes, feeling the fullness of him inside of me. How complete it makes me feel. Yet it scares me at the same time, because I've never felt this level of emotional fulfillment when having sex with a man before. I've had relationships, serious relationships. Or so I thought. This, though? I really can't even describe it. In all my years of counseling, observing people, and reading books about love and partnership, no one has ever described this type of feeling to me. This almost undeniable fit, as if we're complex puzzle pieces that have joined solidly together, forming a whole. Tingling starts in my lower back, spreading between my legs. I start to lose it.
I'm going to come, Tacker.
He groans and bucks his hips upward, driving into me deep. His hand drifts. His thumb presses on my clit, and I shatter. Purely shatter into a million little puzzle pieces he'll help me put back together when I come down from this high.
Fuck yes.
Tacker praises me, obviously feeling my body ripple around his cock. He drives his pelvis up again, digs his fingers into my hips hard, and groans out his release. Tiny little jerks of his hips as he orgasms make it even sweeter, as if he's trying to gyrate out every last bit of feeling from what we just experienced. I fall flat onto his chest, unable to even hold myself up. It's amazing how I can be filled with so much satisfaction, yet feel completely depleted at the same time. Tacker's hand settles on my back. He strokes me lightly as we pant and huff through the orgasmic aftershocks. When we've quieted enough, when he's clearly regained a little of his strength, he gently rolls me to the side. The slide of his cock leaving my body always feels like an important loss, but it's what we do after. Tacker exits the bed, disappearing into the bathroom to get rid of the condom. In moments, he's back and sliding into bed. When I'm pulled into his embrace, my head goes to his shoulder, his arm coming around my back to hold me securely to him. It's at moments like this when we end up having our best talks. While not much remains of his walls these days, there's something about the intimacy of sex that seems to obliterate any hesitations in transparency.
Think we need to do a late-night check on Raul?
Tacker asks. I feel a twinge of guilt. I'm still stuck in the sweet post-cuddle feelings of amazing sex, while Tacker is already thinking about Raul. Yeah, I say, because I do. While Raul said he felt better at dinner when I brought him soup, I was still worried. I saw him rubbing at his chest again. That, coupled with the sweating and nausea, had me gravely concerned about him having a heart attack. At lunch today, I couldn't afford to tiptoe around him or pull punches. I was too worried. I'd point blank said, "If this is your heart, we can't mess around with that." Raul blew me off, pointed out there's no risk of heart disease in his family. He's healthy as a horse, strong as an ox, and mean as a burro. He assured me he had some heartburn and possibly a stomach bug, and that was all. He'd actually convinced me then. Since he'd looked better at dinner, I let the nagging go. But still, one last check. Pushing up slightly, I ask Tacker for my phone, which is on the table nearest him. He hands it to me, so I shoot a quick text to Raul. How are you feeling? It's nearing 10, but Raul is normally a late-night person. I'm not surprised when he texts me right back.
Good. I'll see you bright and early tomorrow.
I send a heart emoji back.
You okay?
Tucker asks. He says so, I reply, as I hand my phone back to him. Says he's ready to work tomorrow. I expect Tucker to deposit my phone on the table, then pull me into his arms. I know him. He'll recharge and be ready to go again one more time at least before we go to sleep. And I'll be ready. But we always settle in deep and just hold each other for a while as we exchange murmured words. Instead, Tucker rolls and comes over me, going into a complete straddle at my hips. Holding my phone up, he taps something, then positions it in a way that makes it obvious he's taking a photo of me. Stop! I exclaim, covering my breasts with my hands as I laugh. You pervert! Tucker rolls his eyes.
Keep your tits covered for all I care. It's your face I want.
Damn. That turns me into a puddle of goo. My camera clicks as he takes several as I just lay there, half embarrassed at being so exposed. Not my breasts or my nakedness, but that he's interested in my face.
You're stunning, he murmurs as he snaps another picture.
I can't help that my lips curl into a smile. It actually makes his breath catch, which makes my breath catch. He takes another picture. Then he starts working the phone again. After a few taps, his brow furrows in concentration until he finally says,
There. Texted them all to my phone.
He then turns the phone downward one more time, hovering it right over his cock, which is softened but is still quite impressive in size. He snaps a pic, handing my phone back to me with a grin.
Now you can look at this when we're apart.
Oh my God! You didn't just take a dick pic, did you? He smirks as he presses my phone into my hands.
You know you want it.
I sort of do. While he rolls off me to the mattress again, I pull up the photo he just took, and it's really quite beautiful. Of course, everything about his body is beautiful to me. I scroll through the pictures he took of me, and I'm embarrassed. True to his word, they're all above my neck. But my expression is one of such intense longing for him that my face flushes hot. There's no hiding the fact I'm falling for him. Hard. Tucker is on his back, his own phone now in his hand. He doesn't try to hide it from me, but his expression is intense as he works. I've never seen his home screen before. There's a beautiful blonde's photo set as the background. Without ever having seen her before, I know it's MJ. He puts in his password, pulls up his text, and methodically saves each photo he took of me and texted to himself. When he's done, he puts the phone down and grins lecherously.
Got my spank bank loaded for the coming road trips.
I wrinkle my nose. You're gross.
You adore me,
he counters, pulling me into him. He wraps his arm around me, going quiet for a long moment.
I've got a ton of photos of MJ on my phone. It's kind of weird having you there with her.
There's no hiding the way my body tenses and instinctually tries to pull away from him at this proclamation. Tightening his hold, he continues talking.
Don't be upset by that.
I'm not, I assure him, leaning my head back so he can see my eyes. See the truth there. I'm not threatened by what you had with MJ, Tucker. I promise.
Many women would be,
he points out. Do you feel less for me because of her memory? I ask this not because I need the answer, but because he does. He shakes his head slowly, his gaze finally coming to me. There's a telltale flush of pink in his cheeks.
Sometimes I feel a lot more, not because of her memory, but because of who you are.
It's not until I hear those words and feel the release of pressure from my chest that I realize I was indeed bothered by MJ's presence on his phone. Immediately, I feel shame and self-loathing that I couldn't be more of a professional in my assessment of the situation, even though, deep down, all of my education means exactly squat when it comes to my own matters of the heart.
I'm going to go see your parents next week, he says.
Once again, my body jolts, this time in pure surprise at the change of subject. You were close to them, I point out. It's something I learned in counseling, that Tacker was closer to MJ's parents than to his own dad and stepmom. But like with all his other relationships after the crash, he'd pulled away. He admitted the guilt was the worst when it came to them, because he had convinced himself he'd killed their only daughter. When I pressed him, though, he also had to admit they'd never made him feel that way. They'd never held him accountable. Instead, they'd only wanted to share their grief with him. Since then, he has seen her parents periodically, forcing himself to be there for them. He told me they were the only people he ever made an effort for, so it makes me happy to know he's going to see them.
I want to tell them about you, he continues, tracing my cheekbones with a fingertip. I think they'd like to know.
Cupping his cheek, I stroke the stubble there. I think you're an amazing man, Tacker. They're incredibly lucky to still have you in their lives.
It seems like I'm the lucky one, he murmurs, right before bringing his lips to mine.
What starts out as a gentle kiss of gratitude turns hot with the mere touch of his tongue to mine. Then his fingers are inside me, and I'm melting all over again for him.
Chapter 28, Tacker. It's the last week of regular season play, and we're on the downswing. Two more away games, a last home game, and then we are in the playoffs. We've played so well this season that we've clinched the number one seed. This game should be easy. It's against my former team, the Dallas Mustangs, and they aren't even in playoff contention. But I can't gloat about that. It has nothing to do with me leaving the organization. I was good, the best they had, but one man does not make an entire team. I have no hard feelings against the Mustangs for cutting me loose in the expansion draft. I was a burden to them following the crash, first with my physical injuries and then with my emotional, which led me to sit out the entire last half of the season. So, yeah, should be an easy game. Except it's not. One of the last-minute trades the Mustangs management made was for Lars Nielsen from the LA Demons. He and I have a history, and it's not good. In November, we had an incident where he was handing out jabs and stabs, trying to get me to retaliate. It's what defensemen do to star players. Ordinarily, I'm cool under pressure, able to compartmentalize that shit away from my emotions. I understand the value of keeping steady so I can score for my team. But Lars got dirtier than normal, telling me that I played hockey as well as I flew planes. At first, I couldn't believe he'd said something so heartless, to prey upon someone's loss, my loss. Things went black after that. No clue what the fuck happened, except I was being pulled off an unconscious Lars Nielsen. Deep down, I knew I'd done something to him. Even deeper down, I was pissed to still see him breathing, although I've never admitted that dirty little secret to anyone. Later, I'd been told I'd struck him in the head with my knee. I'd even watched video of it, felt immense satisfaction in watching him go limp. In hindsight, I'm sorry for it. Head injuries are serious, and I could have truly hurt the guy with long-term effects. I hated what my actions did to my team because I got suspended for 10 games. Hated how I felt about myself because I'd liked causing him pain. But I'm not that guy these days. Today, I'm a guy who's back in the swing of life and focused on the championship prize. I'm not going to get distracted by a hockey player with a dented ego looking for some payback. Like right now, Nielsen hacks at my leg with his stick, playing it off like he's just trying to jockey for the puck Bishop just sent my way. Lowering my shoulder, I give him a hard nudge to his chest as I put my blade on the biscuit. I juke right, he follows, then I cut left, making a 180 circle around him. Left in the dust, Nielsen takes one more slice at my leg with his stick, but he misses. Aaron Wild does not. He comes out of nowhere, speeding like a freight train and squatting to lower his center of gravity. His shoulder goes into Nielsen's chest, and I have a brief image of his feet flying out from under him. I toss the puck off to Dax in the corner, but it doesn't matter. Aaron is called for a penalty. It was a vicious hit, which was completely illegal since the puck was nowhere near Nielsen when it was delivered. Unsurprisingly, Aaron's called for a game misconduct and booted off the ice. Doesn't matter. There's less than 3 minutes left until the end of the play, and we're up by 3 goals. Nielsen doesn't mess with me for the rest of the game.
You looked really good out there tonight, Charles Schmidt says to me from across the table. He's got a draft beer in front of him. MJ's father, Charles, is everything a man could want in a father-in-law. He was doting and protective of MJ, but never threatening to me. He treated me like an adult, a man, from the start, and we became close over the few years MJ and I dated. I'm especially touched that he came to the game tonight in an Arizona Vengeance jersey with my name and number on the back. His wife, Patty, sits next to him with a glass of Prosecco in front of her. She and MJ both loved that bubbly wine, and it's exactly how I would describe her. Bubbly, effervescent. She was always the life of any party, but right now, she looks subdued and unsure of herself. How can I blame her? I haven't exactly been open and friendly to these people over the last year and a half. Haven't been mean either. I couldn't be outright mean to the two people who treated me like a son before I ever officially became one. But I pulled away when I should have been helping them with their grief. I didn't let them console me. Instead, I let their insistence I was not at fault in the crash fall on deaf ears. I took my love away from them. It's something I need to rectify immediately, which is why I reached out to them and asked if they could meet up after the game. So in a quiet but swank bar near the arena, I look first to Charles, then Patty, and lay out my apology. I'm sorry for not being there for you after MJ died. They both jerk, their eyes flying wide in surprise. Patty starts shaking her head, and Charles's eyes fill with tears. I press on. I was selfish, caught up in my own guilt and grief. I forgot you two were probably hurting more than I was. Worse, you tried to help me and love me through it, and I ignored you. I know that caused you more pain, and I'm just so deeply sorry. I hope you can forgive me. Patty starts crying in earnest, pulling her cocktail napkin out from under her wine to dab at her eyes. Charles blinks his eyes furiously, giving a hard cough. I have more to say, though, and I need to get it out before I lose my fortitude. I got really lost for a long time. Didn't want to go on, but I didn't know how to end things either. So I just withdrew and became an ass to most people. I made so many bad choices, and I felt like shit all the time. MJ would have been so disappointed in me. The daughter you raised would have smacked me and told me to get my head out of my ass. You raised such an amazing woman, and I did her memory a disservice with the way I acted. If she...
Stop!
Charles commands, his eyebrows drawing inward. He raises a hand, pointing a shaky finger across the table.
Just stop, Tacker. None of what you're saying is necessary. But it is, I say quietly, because I need you to know how much the two of you mean to me. My actions have said the opposite, so it's important you know.
We know,
Patty says, reaching across the table to grab my hand. I latch onto hers and we don't let go. She smiles tremulously.
MJ picked the best man to be her partner. We couldn't be more proud of you or love you any more than we do. You'll always be a son to us, no matter what.
Fuck. That gets me, and I have to blink back the tears. Charles coughs again before taking a long pull on his beer.
Now that the touchy-feely crap is out of the way, how are you feeling about the playoffs?
Patty gives her husband a sharp jab in the ribs with her elbow. He grunts with pain, shooting her an apologetic look. Returning her attention to me, Patty says,
How are you doing? Really?
It's a relief that I can tell her something positive. Good, now. Truly. Patty beams.
That's so good to hear, Tacker. We just want you to be happy.
I think I'm on my way, I offer, glancing from one to the other. It took me a long time to let go of the guilt.
You know, we never, Charles starts to say, but I cut him off by raising my hand.
You never. I aim my gaze directly at him. Never once had he made me feel guilty for talking his little girl onto that plane with me. Not one time had he ever held me responsible for not being able to land it safely. And I can't thank you enough for your trust and love.
Tell me how you did it,
Patty says, in a quiet demand to hear all about my journey.
What made you finally see reason that none of it was your fault?
I give a snort, followed by a smirk.
Well, I sort of got drunk, ran my truck into a concrete barrier at the arena right before a game, and got suspended.
Yeah, we read about that in the papers,
Charles says, his tone censuring.
I was so messed up, but for some reason the team wouldn't give up on me. I mean, I had to do some work. They required I go to therapy, and when I did, well, let's just say it was what I needed. Some professional help to make me start seeing things from a different perspective. Wish I would have done it a long time ago, honestly.
Patty squeezes my hand.
The point is, you've done it now. I'm just so happy to hear that, Tacker. You deserve to be happy.
I drop my eyes to the table, needing to be fully transparent with them, to tell them the hardest part of what I need to say. Lifting my head, I look them directly in the face. First Charles, then Patty.